You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, March 15th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live from the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Welcome to the program today, ladies and gentlemen. All eyes still remain on Japan. Obviously, an incredible tragedy has taken place there, and it may not be over. Last night, the New York Times had a story. I don't know what time it broke, around 11 o'clock p.m., that was absolutely chilling. Essentially, saying that following the explosion and fire at the number four reactor of the Fukushima Daiichi plant, that all the workers had essentially evacuated. This was a plant that was offline at the time of the earthquake and the tsunami, and I think this is the one they were pouring in the seawater. And they apparently, I don't know, I guess they couldn't maintain the ability to do that. By the morning, it was clear that 50 workers had stayed and had essentially been able to maintain, I guess. Frankly, the whole thing has been just overwhelming and difficult for me to follow. And it's very hard to know how much truth you're getting out of the Japanese government or the power plant responsible for this. I mean, they're telling civilians to clear out of a 12-mile radius, and anybody who's in within a 20-mile radius to basically shut their windows and put wet cloths over their mouths. We know that by yesterday afternoon, the U.S. Navy choppers had been pulled back. The U.S. Navy had pulled back away from the coastline because they were getting an elevated reading on radioactive particles. So there's no way to know. Viewer sends us a care of, I think it was Zero Hedge, a Ustream version of a Geiger counter in Tokyo. So clearly not out of the woods. Nobody's quite sure exactly even what needs to be done and how quickly it needs to be done, other than to keep those reactors, I guess, the fuel rods covered with water. I'm not even frankly clear on what happens. I mean, I understand if they're not covered, they're going to melt down and then through the bottom. Right? Is that right?
My understanding is that if they melt down, part of the process, part of the degradation of nuclear fuel is the creation of extreme heat situations where water can become explosive. That's what happened with the steam explosion. And if that happens in the core and there's an explosion, then all of the particles of the nuclear fuel that are way more, you know, their radioactivity is much greater than what's being vented right now, just flies everywhere in the explosion. It's a fallout situation.
And then, you know, the big problem is, obviously, you get that in your lungs and whatnot. You are subject to various different forms of cancer. You can take iodine pills, I guess, which would protect your thyroid for a certain period of time, but it can get into your lungs and whatnot. But the real danger, apparently, is that it gets into the soil, and then you've destroyed the food chain. So, and I guess that's also a function of which way the wind is blowing, and very little likely, even in the worst case scenario, that it would blow into the west coast of the United States, from what I understand. But you could be talking about poisoning the vast majority of Japan.
Korea, China are all, depending on which way the wind blows.
And so we will continue to talk about this. In the post-show, we can talk about the viability of nuclear power going forward in this country. Apparently, Germany and Switzerland have already sort of put a moratorium on their plans to build new new nuclear power plants. You know, and I was on Radigan's show yesterday, and basically my feeling is this, is that I don't trust these the nuclear power industries to build safe power plants. I mean, you got to presume that in Japan, with all the dangers they know that are they are potentially subject to, earthquakes, tsunamis, I guess they this building, these reactors were built to withstand a 7.1, 7.2.
I heard 8.2.
Whatever it was greater than that.
Yeah.
And you have to also presume that Japan is far more sensitive to the idea of radiation poisoning than just about any other country in the world, if not any. And based upon the industrial policy of the Japanese government on how tight their regulation is. I mean, we were talking for a couple of days about how many lives were saved in Japan because of their strict building codes. And we know that the Japanese government has a closer relationship to the industries in that country than we do in this country. And so how, when you look at what happened in the Gulf, and the regulatory failure there, relative to other deep water drilling in other countries, in terms of what they require of these energy companies, I don't know how. I'm not talking whether it's possible to build a safe nuclear plant. I'm convinced that it is. I don't know what you do with the byproducts, where you store that. But in theory, I am sure that it's possible to build a safe one. It may take even more government subsidies. But the fact of the matter is, I don't believe that with the current relationship of corporations in this country to our government and to our regulatory structure, I don't believe that we have the capacity to build a safe one. And a listener reminds me that in 2005, a law limiting the liability, essentially, of these. I mean, never mind the fact that, of course, we're going to spend billions of dollars to build these. And by we, I don't mean the companies. I mean, we, our tax dollars. Of course. Of course, we subsidize these things to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, probably. At least $100 billion. But it would be more. But we've also provided in the 2004-2005 energy policy of George Bush a huge cap on the liability of these companies if there's a, you know, problem. What are you going to do? You don't want to make them pay for it. That could run them out of business. And I know there's a lot of, you know, people are highly invested in this topic. And I have no doubt from a scientific standpoint that it is certainly possible to build a safe nuclear plant. But we're not building this in a laboratory. We're building it in a context of what we have seen as a complete failure of regulation of nearly every industry in this country. So we have a loophole in the hydrofracking, which basically says we can't know what it is they're putting into the ground, so there's no way for us to measure whether or not it's poisoning our well water. When we build a deep water drilling unit, it was an extra $250,000 we'd have to put in there to put in some stopgap measure just in case there was some type of minor explosion, which would pour millions of barrels of oil into the Gulf of Mexico. So, you know, that's really the issue. There's a very practical implication to this. Meanwhile, moving to the Midwest, there is a and I should also say this, a couple of house cleaning things. First of all, we're going to put this link on the blog if we haven't already. Dorsey nods to me as if we have actually done this. I don't know if that's a nod or it's just simply he has a tick. Is it a tick?
Yes.
It was a tick. All right. So we're going to put this on the blog. But there is going to be a events in 50 states today after work, March 15th. At schools, libraries, fire stations, hospitals, and parks to stand up against Republican cuts, proposed cuts to our budget. Sadly, we're also getting similar proposals, though not as draconian, from our administration. We'll show our support for the public worker services and institutions making a difference in our lives. We'll also make sure that Congress knows we'll hold them accountable for their vote. This is an action taking place with Move On and various unions around the country. I should also say, I want to say at this point, a huge thank you to Longshore Man I Am, who has sent us beautiful Dell 17-inch monitor and a piece of equipment that Evan has been pining for some time. Again, I remind you that if you have any, what is it, Intel-based processors?
Intel-based Macintoshes or any netbooks.
Any netbooks like a Dell Mini or an Asus. Email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com because we are in need of some computing equipment. And if you can become a member, please do so. Buy your coffee at justcoffee.coop. Coffee prices are going up. You can get 10% discount at justcoffee.coop with the coupon code majority, and if you buy your goods through that Amazon link at majority.fm, click through the link, bookmark it, just buy all your stuff through Amazon, you will feel nothing different other than the knowledge that you are redistributing wealth from Amazon into the support of the Majority Report. And just briefly, in Wisconsin, one of the Fitz brothers, apparently the leader of the Senate in Wisconsin and the leader of the House in Wisconsin, the Assembly, brothers. And their third brother or brother-in-law controls the state troopers. It's like
New Jersey.
It's like Boardwalk Empire. So the Senate Majority Leader, Scott Fitzgerald, emailed his caucus in the Senate that Senate Democrats, he has determined, will remain in contempt of the Senate, even though they have returned, and will not be allowed to vote in committees. They are free to attend hearings, listen to testimony, debate legislation, and choose amendments and cast votes to signal their support. But those votes will not count and will not be recorded. Essentially, voiding committee representation for everyone living in Senate districts 3, 4, 6, 7, 12, 15, 16, 22, 24, 25, 26, 27, 30, and 31 in Wisconsin.
Do you think that affects quorum in any of them?
Republican Wisconsin Senate caucus also came out with their new proposal for their the state's national state's anthem. I don't know. It's like badger talk or something. I have no idea what this is. Okay, so that's happening in Wisconsin. Also out of Wisconsin, apparently tomorrow in D.C., Wisconsin Republicans are going coming to Washington for a fundraiser with their corporate taskmasters. You can check out the Progressive Change Committee and join a protest down there if you're in D.C. And meanwhile, nearly half the signatures collected for the recall of the Republican senators has already taken place. Democrats have collected, according to Greg Sargent at The Washington Post, over 45% of the signatures necessary to hold recall elections for eight GOP senators. They have collected over 56,000 signatures supporting the recall drives. That's up from roughly 14,000 after last weekend. So they're getting about 40,000 per week. They need, I think, around 120,000 all said and done. Dems need to amass the required signatures, 25% of the number of people who voted in the last gubernatorial election in each district, by a deadline of 60 days after first filing for recalls, which happened nearly 2 weeks ago. In other words, Democrats are reporting they are nearly halfway to the finish line with roughly three-fourths of the allotted time remaining. One caveat, the second half of signatures is always more difficult than the first half. I know that from just membership, please, on this show. The first half came much easier than the second half. So good luck to Democrats in Wisconsin. We'll have more on what's going on in Ohio and Michigan when we get back. But speaking of labor, we're going to talk to Dave Zirin from edgeofsports.com. You may have read some of the stuff in The Nation. He's going to give us an update on the labor dispute in the NFL. You think it has nothing to do with labor? You are wrong. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back on The Majority Report. Hi, folks. You can always support the show and get great coffee, tea, or chocolate by going to justcoffee.coop. Putting the coupon code MAJORITY in the coupon box, get a 10% discount, get some great fair trade coffee. And, of course, the real way that this show is going to be able to continue is if you become a member now. You can do so at majority.fm. You get almost an hour of extra daily show, plus some swag, plus knowing that you're supporting independent media. Thanks. People are baby color marching side by side. Marching past the fields where a million fascists are to fight. We are back. Sam Cedar on The Majority Report. On the phone, Dave Zirin of edgeofsports.com. He is the sports writer for The Nation magazine. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be here, Sam, and welcome back to Radioland.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And now, let me ask you this. Let's start with this. I was on Dylan Radigan's program yesterday, sitting next to Rick Lazio, who, I got to say, in person, it's pretty shocking that people thought he would be the senator or governor of the state of New York. But be that as it may, his reaction, of course, to the labor situation in the NFL was, these players are big fat babies who can feel sympathy for these multimillionaires. First, you know, give me a sense of these football players, what is their economic situation? I mean, they're not all millionaires. They certainly make more than you or I might, but they have a very limited window to make this, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, you got to think about how much money they expect to make over the course of their whole lives. A typical NFL player plays 3.4 years. They generally come from very poor socioeconomic backgrounds, and they die 22 years earlier than the typical American male. Jeez. And frankly, I don't think Rick Lazio would last one day in even an off-season minicamp. And it's frankly, if you really want to talk about people who are entitled and cloistered and crying all the way to the bank, I think NFL owners, the very people who supported Rick Lazio's ill-begotten campaigns for public office, are the ones who should be looking in a mirror.
Right. I mean, these are guys who are millionaires and literally billionaires. And
they're all billionaires. Every franchise is worth $1 billion now.
Wow.
The business has never been healthier. And in the context of the most successful season in the history of the NFL, they want 18% wage cuts and they want players to play two extra games. The response from the players has been a three-word response: open the books. And that's what NFL owners have refused to do. They've refused to open the books to show that they are, in fact, losing money in the context of all this success. Now, this raises a lot of questions, Sam. I mean, why won't they open the books? Is it because, like the owners of the New York Mets, they leveraged their franchise against the stock market? If people like Bernie Madoff and took a total bath in 2008? Is it because they lied to our cities and municipalities to get more tax money for stadiums? We don't know the answer to that, but you have to assume the worst if they're willing to sacrifice the season on the principle of financial secrecy.
Right. Now, let's back up just a minute. Like, give me a sense. Now, obviously, Tom Brady, he's doing quite well. But if you're working on the line, one of these, you know, if you're one of the guys who are not, you know, sort of one of the household names, or you're not making millions of dollars. And like you say, you have a 3 or 4 year window to make all this money.
I think the way people have to look at it is not how much they make in an individual season, but you have to imagine somebody who's 26 years old. They have made maybe $500,000 over the course of their career, and they now have to figure out what the heck they're going to do for the rest of their life, which on average is just going to be 30 more years because they're going to die by the age of 55. Now, to me, the much more, and I'm a huge football fan, but I'll tell you, Sam, the far more rational discussion is whether or not there should even be professional football, given the incredible harm it does to people, than whether or not football players should actually be paid
right
for doing this incredible task.
Right. And I'll tell you something, it's a much harder job than I mean, there are plenty of millionaires out there, but you can't really replace these guys on the field, can you?
No, you can't replace. And it's interesting because, like, take a restaurant, for example. A chef is the labor. A steak is the product of that labor. In the NFL, the players are both labor and product.
Right.
And I think that's what people sometimes don't understand. And instead of, say, being a chef who goes to school and learns how to mold that steak into being something delicious and worth $25, you're talking about players who exploit their own bodies, basically, and who put their own bodies through the same process that a chef puts a steak through, right, for the purposes of entertaining us on Sunday with 3.5 hours of highly, highly commodified violence.
So let's talk about this now. My understanding is over the weekend, the NFL Players Association decertified. Explain to me what that process was all about.
Sure. Decertification. I mean, there's a very complicated way to explain this, Sam, but I'll make it the very easy way. They dissolve as a union and instead become a trade association, which involved over 50% of the players voluntarily agreeing to have the NFLPA leadership represent them. So they're a voluntary trade association. And by being a voluntary trade association instead of a bargaining unit, that's effectively a closed shop. Like, if you're in the NFL, you're part of the NFLPA. They now can sue the NFL to prevent a lockout. As the NFLPA, they are forbidden to take the league to court. But as a players' trade association, they can sue using U.S. labor law to say that you cannot lock us out this fall. And so it's interesting. When the negotiations broke down and I heard the NFLPA was decertifying, I wrote, hey, every football fan out there should not be crying that collective bargaining broke down. They should be celebrating, because this is the best chance we're going to have to actually see football this fall, is if there's an injunction against NFL owners for trying to lock them out.
Right. Now, I guess this was a sort of a recognition that by the Players Association that the owners can win in a war of attrition. I mean, like you say, you've only got 3 years to make this money for an average football player. You lose a year, you're losing one third of your entire career. Whereas these millionaires and billionaires, or I should say billionaires, I guess, certainly can afford it much more than the players. And that's what they know. I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's the dynamic that's going on here. You have these billionaires with all the power.
And it's their arrogance in this process. And I've been following this crop process way too closely at this point. I've got like a sports labor fatigue right now. But I can tell you that the arrogance that they have shown would be very familiar to anybody who's been following Governor Scott Walker or the Koch brothers or any of the people who make up the modern plutocracy in this country. I mean, it's this idea that says, well, actually, I have the biggest checkbook in the room, and therefore, I don't need to tell you a damn thing. And that's what's so poisoned the well in these negotiations, because you need some form of trust and some form of spirit of collaboration in any collective bargaining situation. But the owners have earned zero trust. I'll give you one example. The owners hired an outside counsel by the name of Bob Batterman. Bob Batterman was the person who engineered the shutting down of the NFL a couple of years ago. So even hiring Bob Batterman was considered a very aggressive act. And Bob Batterman was proposed, the union proposed to Bob Batterman. They said, why don't we do something where we take the cuts you propose, but we open the books and the players become part minority owners of the franchises. And Batterman didn't even take this back to the owners. He just said to them, my clients have no interest in being partners with your guys. Mm. I mean, he might as well have just said, I have no business, don't want to be partners with you people. Based on the reaction that some of the I spoke to afterwards of some of the players who were there.
Let's get into a little bit about why these owners would not want to open their books. I mean, if they are crying that they're losing money, which is, I don't know, it seems sort of impossible to believe.
Ludicrous.
Because the NFL is basically now sort of supplanted baseball as the national pastime in this country.
You could even argue that it's passed any other television program as the national pastime. Do you know the NBC's Sunday Night Football show, Football in America, was the number one rated show in the country in the fall ratings? The Super Bowl was the number one watched show in the history of American television. Unless they are bathing themselves in caviar and lighting Cuban cigars with $1,000 bills, which is very possible, or unless they partnered up with Bernie Madoff, which is also very possible, it's hard to imagine how they're losing money.
But in either one of those situations, frankly, that shouldn't be taken out of the players. I mean, in that sense,
exactly.
You know, if these guys made bad investments with the profits they made from their football enterprises, that doesn't mean that their football enterprises are losing money. It means that they lost money.
But it could be even worse than that. Like the same way so many Americans got underwater by using their homes as cash registers, taking out money on their homes and putting it in the stock market only to see the market implode. You're dealing with a situation with the New York Mets, for example, where the Wilpons used the new City Stadium, Citibank Stadium, City Field, whatever the horrible name it is, and used it as a cash register to leverage it, take out money, and give it to Bernie Madoff. And now they flush their liquidity, and they need to sell the team for 10 cents on the dollar and just get the heck out. That is the fear that I think a lot of NFL owners, or at least observers, have, that lurking inside these closed books is the kind of financial malfeasance which would be a black eye on the game that's even more extreme than losing games this fall.
Yeah, isn't there any type of restriction on what you can do with those assets from the league? I mean, I would think you know, if you own a co-op or a condo apartment in New York City, the association basically says you can't leverage it beyond a certain point because you're part of a greater unit, and we don't want there to be a vacant apartment there or something. We don't want a foreclosure there. So is there no, within the NFL, is there no stipulations that you can't leverage this this asset more than X number, you know, percentage of its worth?
It's even worse than you say, though, Sam, because you talked about how you can't do that unless your partners agree to it, or unless your partners have say so. In this situation, the partners aren't only the players, which is, I think, what you were inferring, but it's also cities and municipalities around the country. I mean, you're talking about $6 billion in stadium money has went towards the NFL just in the last decade alone, with plans to build a new stadium in Los Angeles. But unfortunately, the entire system is set up where the debt is public, the debt is collectivized, but the profit is privatized.
Right.
They are shielded. They are shielded from criminal prosecution. That's what a lot of people don't know. Is they are unlike any other private business, because I've heard some small business owners say, why the hell should I would never show my books to my workers. You know, this is a matter of privacy issues, and it's a terrible precedent. But no. This is a case where not only are you taking billions of dollars from the public till, you are a business unlike any other American business, or most other American businesses, I should say, the grand majority of American businesses, where you are shielded from federal prosecution. You have immunity from federal prosecution. And in the context of an inflated stock market bubble and a league, unlike the other sports leagues, whose success has just seemed like, as one owner once said to me, a license to print money. You wonder how many succumb to that temptation. And I have no proof about this at all.
Right.
The only proof I have is the Wilpons and the New York Mets, who did this exact thing. And the only proof I have are owners who would rather sacrifice a portion of the season than open their books. I mean, you would forgive me for lacking in Christian charity.
Right. No, totally. And we only have a couple more minutes, but I want to talk more about this immunity. From what are they immune from federal prosecution? What type of possible charges would they be immune from?
Well, the first thing they're immune from are unfair labor practices from top to bottom. I mean, think about things like that we take for granted as part of the American landscape, like the NFL draft, for example. If you look at that strictly as a work operation, it violates every possible labor law in the world. But you think about that. It's like you over there, you're playing for Carolina. Now shut up and pose for the camera. You know, but this has become an ensconced and consecrated part of the NFL. Anti-collusion, for example. I mean, they're able to set prices around players who've played a certain amount of time in the league, for example. They can't offer extra benefits for things like health if you sign for a given player, or say, we'll pay your health care longer than this other company right here is trying to do.
Right.
So there are controls on things like health care costs. There are controls on contracts based on how long you've played in the league. There's the franchise tag, which allows teams to hang on to players even if they're free agents and don't want to be there anymore. I mean, these are all things that they're shielded from prosecution on. But there's also, I've talked to lawyers who say they're also shielded more generally from the ability of the government to go in there and actually look at their books and perform audits. And I think that's the word that scared them more than any other, is the union didn't just say open the books. They said, we want 10 years of audits. And I think that's the thing that made the owners say, this negotiation is now over.
Dave Zirin, sports writer for The Nation magazine. You can read more on a daily basis at edgeofsports.com. So fascinating. Really appreciate your perspective on this.
Oh, my privilege, Sam.
All right, folks, we've got to take a break. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Michael Moore just tweeted out a photograph of 1,000 senior citizens protesting in Lansing, Michigan, part of that Defend the Dream action that I had mentioned prior to talking to Dave Zirin. Coincidentally, also, it's Mark Green's birthday today. So I'm pretty sure the protests are focused on fighting the cuts from our state and federal governments. I'm almost 85% sure that the protests have nothing to do with Mark Green's birthday. So happy birthday to you, sir. Let's see.
You are a douchebag.
Oh, I hit the wrong button. I meant to... no, actually, I probably hit the right button. All right, folks. Picking up on this theme of what's going on around the country in terms of these governments and not just labor disputes, you know, a big part of the Wisconsin thing is actually the cuts to average people. Meanwhile, in Ohio, former Fox News host John Kasich has told reporters, are you ready for this? They will not be allowed to broadcast sound and or images from the Tuesday release of former Fox News' John Kasich's now Ohio governor budget plan. Spokeswoman Connie Verkemp says journalists can only bring pens, notepads, and tape recorders to the afternoon briefing, where Kasich has announced the first details of his state spending blueprint for the next 2 years. Obviously, he must be very proud of what he's doing. No word as to whether or not reporters can bring canvas and oil paint to paint a wonderful mise-en-scene of the release of the budget details. She says videos and photos will be prohibited and the audio may not be used for anything but checking accuracy. So no radio for you folks. An invitation-only town hall meeting later Tuesday will be broadcast on government television. Oddly enough, Ohio has also picked its new state anthem. It's going to be a little confusing with Governor Walker's Wisconsin. But remember, on Tuesday, you'll be able to see an invitation-only town hall meeting on the government television. Of course, there will be no audio of the proceedings as Governor Kasich announces his budget for the coming year. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that down.
I hope they have the cameras on, like, on those trolleys, so they have that movement, you know, kind of
yes.
Like Triumph of the Will. Whenever I see that, I saw that during one State of the Union.
It's a jib. It's either a jib or a dolly.
Dolly. Yeah, that freaks me out when I see that at political events. Though one of Bush's State of the Unions, they had movement with the cameras, and I was just like, this feels a little
more
weird.
Often than not, that'll be a jib these days.
Yeah.
Because it'll sweep. It can go both.
Like the stuff they have in the NFL, like it just kind of like hangs there.
Horizontally and vertically at the same time. So you give you like a sweeping move like that.
Lenny would have loved those.
We will have someday a jib on our Sammy cam. Meanwhile, not to be outdone, this is like the Republican Douchebag Governors Association. Not to be outdone, Governor Schneider in Michigan has released his, I guess, budget. He is proposing ending his state's earned income tax credit. That's for poor people. Cutting a $600 per child tax credit because, come on, these kids should be working anyways. Reducing credits for seniors, Also cutting funding for school districts by 8 to 10%. At the same time, the Michigan League for Human Services found the state's business taxes would be reduced by nearly $2 billion or 86% under Snyder's plan. Do you understand? They are cutting from poor people. They are cutting from poor kids. They are cutting from seniors because they are in a crisis. And the other thing they're doing is cutting 86% of business taxes. I am telling you, folks, the one way to make Michigan competitive, reduce the amount of taxes that businesses pay by 100%. Give them kickbacks and put a forced maximum wage on everyone living in the state, $6. $6 an hour. Actually, $6 a day. You will see businesses flock to Michigan. Remove those draconian child labor laws that are impinging upon all of our freedom. And allow kids to work. If they can make it to the factory, allow them to work. Don't cry to me about safety. Their tiny little fingers will not be crushed as quickly in those gears of machinery as a full-grown adult. There will be an extra couple of seconds for them to remove their hands because of the size of their hands. You understand? They could slide it out quicker. This is stunning. Business taxes would be cut by 86% from an estimated $2.1 billion in fiscal year 2011 to $292 million in fiscal year 2013. That should close the budget gap, shouldn't it? Currently, someone in the poorest 20% of Michigan taxpayers pays a tax rate of 8.9%, while someone in the richest one pays 5.3%. That is not to mention what we have talked about before, now reported in the Michigan Messenger. The Michigan Martial Law Act of 2011. Is that what it's really called? Is that what it's really called? The Michigan Martial Law Act of 2011? Or is that just, that can't be what it's really called. No. It's called some type of Financial Emergency Act. According to the law, which has already been approved in the House, the governor will be able to declare financial emergency in the towns or school districts and appoint someone to fire local affected elected officials, break contracts, seize and sell all assets, and eliminate services. Do you understand what they're saying here? The local prefect that you have voted for in your municipalities is no longer valid. He or she will be eliminated from office, and the central state government, Herr Schneider, will appoint someone much smarter, someone far more efficient to run your city or town. I don't even know what to say about this. I mean, it's stunning. It's unprecedented. I cannot believe that this is constitutional. I can't believe it's constitutional. They're going after Detroit. Apparently, Republican State Senator Brandenburg. Yeah, Brandenburg said several urban areas of the state, especially Detroit, are in bad shape and will need a state-appointed emergency financial manager, or an EMF, who can impose strong medicine. They're sending our own doctors there. Doctors of government to impose strong medicine and to do tests. Experiments. He has to have the backbone. He has to have the power to null and void a contract. So this is an attempt by states to null and void union contracts. I mean, that's the primary, I think, function of this. Governor Schneider has received millions of dollars of the Republican Governor's Association and the Chamber of Commerce for his run in 2010. And, yes, he's well-backed by corporate interests. So, folks, that's your... that is your fascism report for the day. We're going to take a break. We're going to head to the flip side, the members only, in that, I guess tomorrow we'll talk about how Republicans in Congress who are presumably concerned about the deficit seem to be only concerned about the deficit when it involves cutting things that are consistent with their moral majority agenda. Not that that's terribly surprising to you. Give you an update on Libya on the flip side, too. Not looking good for rebels there. They headed to the G8 meeting with a desperate plea. We'll talk more about that. On the flip side, you can IM me at Majority FM. Folks, have a wonderful Tuesday. I want you very much to enjoy the wonderful weather that your governor has brought to you if you're living into the states of Wisconsin or Michigan or Ohio. Talk to you tomorrow. Do you hear that, folks? That's the sound of silence. Now, I don't want to get too philosophical on you here, but that's the sound you're going to hear if I can't get more members. And who am I going to get to join the Majority Report if not you? People who listen to the show on a daily, maybe thrice weekly basis. Become a member today, support the show, ensure its existence. And on top of that, you're going to get an extra 50 minutes of programming on a daily basis, access to members-only content on Majority.fm, and a warm, fuzzy feeling inside of you. Or that also could be some of the swag that I send. Either way, become a member today. And don't forget, we're sponsored by Just Coffee at justcoffee.coop. You can get tea, you can get chocolate, you can get coffee, obviously. It's all fair trade, it's delicious, and you can get 10% off by putting Majority in the coupon code at justcoffee.coop. So support the show! And enjoy it.